Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, August 31st. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. Today's topic, has e-commerce permanently accelerated? My first guest today discussing this topic is Principal Analyst Andrew Lipsman. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Sarah. Good to be here.
And also joining me today is Senior Analyst Blake Droesch. Welcome back, Blake.
Hey, Sarah. Good to be back.
All right, let's jump right into our first segment, News and Reviews, where I give the news and our guests tell me their reviews. Today's headline is an August 22nd story from the Wall Street Journal titled, Instacart Revenue Growth Accelerates Ahead of Planned IPO. Instacart's revenues increased 39% year over year in Q2. That's much faster acceleration than Q1's growth of 15% year over year. Wall Street Journal's reporter Berber Jin writes, Instacart orders and revenue grew in the second quarter as consumers stuck to online grocery delivery despite rising prices and store reopenings, a promising sign for investors as the company prepares for an initial public offering as soon as later this year. So that is good news for the company looking to go public. Andrew, your review of this headline in 60 seconds is...
Well, as you said, it's good news for Instacart. I think that Instacart recently has been hammered because of the apparent growth slowdown post-pandemic, perhaps more of a victim of their own success, like some of the big pandemic winners. But that apparently complicated things on this path to IPO, which was thought that would happen in 2021. It got delayed. And then really, we didn't know if or when it was going to happen this year. So now we finally got a sign with some strong revenue growth. It's accelerated from Q1 to Q2. And it looks like they're now clearing a path to IPO. You know, it looks like both there's increase in order volume coming from the core grocery e-commerce business, and then also some additional upside in the revenue growth that would be coming presumably from advertising. So I think there's a lot of things working in Instacart's favor. It's probably been unfairly maligned over the last 3 months, and now maybe the market is ready to recalibrate.
Gotcha. Blake, your review of this headline in 60 seconds is...
So yeah, as someone who follows digital grocery sales pretty closely, especially in the U.S. market, the fact to see that their order volumes had increased came as a little bit of a surprise to me. But you can certainly, you know, make the assumption that overall digital grocery sales have tapered a little bit coming down from the huge pandemic boom. And especially with all this conversation about the price of groceries, it's logical to assume that a lot of consumers will forego the, you know, service charges and delivery charges that are associated with digital grocery and go back into the stores for value, foregoing that convenience. But I think that, you know, Instacart does have a really strong business. They've carved out a pretty solid niche for themselves in terms of a lot of that digital grocery adoption that we saw in the pandemic went to Instacart, as seen by the really large sales growth that they had during 2020 and 2021. And a lot of the times, I think that we look at sort of these macroeconomic trends as a whole and sort of forget to look specifically at the customer base of these companies. Young, affluent millennials are the ones that are really driving the sort of core trend adoption of digital grocery. And they may not have been hit as hard as the general population has when it comes to inflation, or maybe, you know, still willing to pay for that convenience, and maybe even more so now that their lives have gotten busier post-pandemic.
Sure. Definitely Instacart IPO, something to keep an eye on. Keep your eye on this podcast feed. Hopefully we'll be doing an episode on it soon. This conversation is a lot about people moving to buying groceries digitally, which I think is a good segue into our conversation of e-commerce. So now it's time for our next segment, Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today's topic, has e-commerce permanently accelerated? So in 2020, which is somehow 2 years ago now, a McKinsey chart circulated suggesting e-commerce accelerated 10 years in 10 weeks. That was at the start of the pandemic. The chart showed e-commerce penetration jumping from like the 15 to 20% range to the 30 to 35% range in just a few months. Flash forward to now, the trend line's looking a lot closer to where it was before all of that buzz. Our own numbers put e-commerce at like 15% penetration. That's 15% of retail sales this year overall. Andrew, you can explain this way better than I can. What happened?
Yeah, well, let's start with the 10 years in 10 weeks. It was very provocative and really circulated around social media. There's two components to the equation. One is e-commerce, and then as a percentage of total retail. So e-commerce obviously surged in the early days of the pandemic, but the bottom dropped out of brick and mortar retail, which is the primary component of the denominator. And so it really exaggerated the effect. Again, it was very provocative, but it was a realistic reflection of maybe the first few weeks or maybe the first month or two of the pandemic. Things quickly normalized. By the end of that first year, it was more accurate to say that e-commerce had accelerated about 2.5 years in that first year. So that's the beginning of the nuance. Now, you know, the question is really like, has it permanently accelerated at all? We took the fact that it did accelerate during that period of time and assumed that it was a permanent acceleration. And now recently, a lot more questions have arisen about the permanence of that.
Sure. I think that's such an important point about the denominator, right? Like we have penetration of e-commerce as share of retail. If the retail in the stores is getting smaller, retail in online is going to look bigger in comparison. Blake, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think that there are a certain number of categories, and I think maybe like apparel is a great example, where there is high e-commerce penetration. I think for apparel and accessories, we have this year, it's somewhere roughly around 35% share of, you know, e-commerce sales. And that's a category that I think where it's in that sort of sweet spot where the circumstances of the consumer can switch either way. Most people have likely purchased a piece of apparel both in store and online, and there's some flexibility. So the idea of that moving back and forth rather than fully extending to e-commerce because of the context of the situation makes a lot of more sense that there's that elasticity. But then you have something like grocery where many people had not really bought many groceries online at all. Maybe, you know, products here and there from Amazon, but that consumer behavior of downloading Instacart, figuring out, you know, how to either operate a click and collect order of going to the store, picking it up, or arranging delivery to your, you know, home or apartment. That's sort of a learned behavior that has a stickiness to it. So on a very basic level, I think that that's how a lot of these different category trends from a purely sort of like qualitative reason have played out the way that they have. And then, you know, it's really been reflected in the numbers there.
Okay. So we just talked through e-commerce jumping. Andrew gave that like 2.5-year jump figure. Andrew, can you put that figure of e-commerce jumping slightly ahead in a little more context?
Yeah, absolutely. So prior to the pandemic, we had been seeing e-commerce penetration of total retail growing at roughly 1 percentage point a year, give or take. It was going from 8% to 9% to 10 to 11. And then all of a sudden, in 2020, it jumped up to about 14.5%. So, you know, all of a sudden it was a 3.5% jump in 1 year's time. Now we've seen that kind of flat line and it's hovered in the 14.5% to 15% range for the last couple of years now as growth catches up with itself. And then, you know, very recently, and part of why we're discussing this today is we saw the CEO of Shopify, as they announced layoffs in their company a few weeks ago, talked about the fact that, and he owned this. He said, we assumed that there would be this permanent acceleration in e-commerce. And what's actually happened is that e-commerce penetration has reverted back to its previous trend line. So at 15% that it's at now is roughly where we would have expected it to be had the pandemic surge never happened. So it looks like, you know, that basically for the most part, there has been this progression that was just kind of temporarily pulled forward. And now things are kind of getting back to the status quo.
Yeah, for sure. So how does that break down across categories? How does something like grocery differ from something like apparel?
Yeah. So as Andrew spoke about sort of the reverting of total e-commerce back to the trend line, that's something that we've seen more or less in more mature e-commerce categories. So think of things like apparel and accessories, computer and consumer electronics. These are areas where most consumers prior to the pandemic had an experience buying from these categories, both in store and online. So there is a little bit more flexibility to go over, move towards e-commerce shopping out of necessity because of the context. And then as we've sort of gotten out of the pandemic and people are returning to stores, that acceleration that we saw wasn't really an acceleration in these categories. It was more or less just a shift in behavior based on context. But then you have lower e-commerce penetration categories, mainly grocery. I think everyone knows that we saw a huge acceleration of digital grocery happening online. That happened because people were forced out of necessity to not go in stores, just like the e-commerce sales boosted in things like apparel and consumer electronics. But because of the fact that they had to learn how to use Instacart or navigate click and collect, where previously they maybe haven't experimented in this type of behavior, that's sort of something that's stuck and then will accelerate. Another thing to note is that digital grocery actually did have pretty strong growth before the pandemic. So if we're going to see it, you know, even revert to the trend line before the pandemic, you're still going to see that growth move up faster than other categories because of the fact that it's sort of, you know, everything is sort of picking up where it left off before the pandemic.
The bottom line is, in order for there to be a permanent acceleration, you need to have evidence of new behaviors being created and sustained. And I think what Blake is really alluding to in grocery is, you know, a lot of people forced to do it for the first time, or other people build more of a habit around it. And so some of that's carrying forward. Other categories, do we see a meaningful change in behavior? I mean, I think about something like apparel. Yeah, the pandemic had people maybe doing a video chat with a personal shopper before. I don't think that's been sustained. I don't hear about people doing that today. I just don't think that's driving the category. So it makes sense that apparel would revert.
For sure. I mean, and with grocery, that's like the Instacart conversation of it all. Like, you're seeing Instacart post their highest revenues yet, rather than coming down from people returning to grocery stores. So definitely a positive outlook for grocery. I want to get into, before we go to break, a slightly broader question. Actually, it's a much broader question. I'm going to ask you guys how high you think e-commerce penetration is going to get. So we've been seeing like 1 to 2 percentage point increases each year. Our forecasts have e-commerce penetration passing 20% in 2026. Is it going to keep growing, or is it going to level off?
Blake?
I'm happy to take a first crack at this one. I mean, that's the $1 million question, right? Or I guess the $1 trillion question now. But, I think there's really, eventually things are going to slow down. But if you look at overall retail, the largest categories are the ones that tend to have the lowest e-commerce penetration. So things like auto, as well as food and beverage, these are the largest categories. They're the things that people spend their money on. So we tend to talk about e-commerce and versus in-store in terms of percentages. But when you look at it in sheer dollar amount, all of these large categories need to do is keep pushing that needle into e-commerce penetration. And even if they don't ever become like an e-commerce majority category, like you have with consumer electronics, where more than half of all sales are coming from online, even if it's just, if it gets to, you know, that 15 high teens percentage, that's still going to really fuel the overall growth of e-commerce. So I don't know, you know, if there's really a number that we can hit on, because, you know, we wish we had a magic eight ball, but we don't. But in terms of like there still being room for a lot of money to enter the market, yes, that's definitely going to still happen, even if the sort of percentage begins to slow down and look like it's plateauing. There's still going to be money coming in. I think that's an important distinction.
Andrew, can I convince you to give me a number?
I'll give a range, and I will say I think it probably tops out eventually in the 30 to 40% range. One of the reasons it's hard to predict is because as long as I've been covering e-commerce, year in and year out, e-commerce grows at 15% plus or minus a couple of percentage points with, you know, a few aberrations in there when you have an extreme event. So until I see that mid-teen growth rate start to meaningfully tip, you know, there's still a lot of legs behind e-commerce growth. And as Blake rightly points out, it's going to start coming from these big categories that are dominant offline, but are going to start to move the needle online. The one caveat I'll say, like in the scenario where it's maybe 40%, I will say that I think a lot of that number will come from fulfilled by store, meaning click and collect and curbside pickup. So it's not going to be a pure e-commerce transaction, but that just more people will transact digitally, but still use the physical retail store. So physical retail is not going anywhere. It's going to play an important role. It's just the future is hybrid. I think that's the reality.
Sure. Okay. So we've discussed e-commerce across categories. That 10 years and 10 weeks prediction was risky in hindsight. We're going to go to break, and then I'm going to ask Andrew and Blake to make some risky predictions of their own. Marketers are under incredible pressure to deliver results amid economic uncertainty and a sea of change in how to target customers and prospects. The timely news, insights, and data delivered in the eMarketer Daily Newsletter gives marketers the tools they need to react and succeed. eMarketer Daily features deep coverage of how brands and agencies are handling their performance marketing, advertising, data management, and more. And unlike other newsletters, we pair our insights on recent news with the research, analysis, and forecasting that sets eMarketer and Insider Intelligence apart. Subscribe to eMarketer Daily today. Welcome back from the break. It is time for a brand new segment, which we're calling Red Hot Retail. This is our guests' opportunity to give us their very specific and potentially risky predictions on a topic. The predictions can be mild, medium, spicy, or extra hot. Mild predictions are our plausible outlooks, where you just need a sip of water for the spice level. Extra hot predictions are our pie-in-the-sky predictions, a wild card still in the realm of possibility that's so spicy you need to drink a whole glass of milk. The higher the spice level, the riskier the prediction. Our guests will tell me what spice level to expect and then share the prediction. Today's prediction answers the question, what will drive e-commerce next phases of growth? So Blake, I'm coming to you. Tell me your spice level and your prediction.
All right. So this one's going to be about a mild to medium spiciness. I don't know if I'm allowed to, you know, get away with a little bit of nuance there, but it's not quite mild, but we're not getting super spicy yet. So we are just throwing out figures for our predictions for total e-commerce penetration. And I think that there's one category that I'm focused on for sure, and that's personal care and home goods, which I think has the potential to reach upwards of 40% e-commerce penetration within the next decade or so. I think when we talk about digital grocery, we tend to focus on food and beverage, but it's the other products that people buy at the grocery store that I think have even more online potential. There's things like toothpaste, deodorant, shaving creams. These are things that people know which brands they already want to buy. They don't need to, you know, feel the package. They don't need to, you know, feel the toothpaste to make sure it's ripe. I think that as time goes on and people get a taste of how convenient it is to order these products around the house, they're just going to become much more likely to go on Amazon, click reorder, and have that be normal practice. That combined with how shipping speeds are accelerating greatly, because once again, these are essential goods that, you know, people need. If you run out of deodorant, you're not going to, you know, walk around smelling for 2 days waiting for your shipment to come. But if you can, you know, order Amazon same day and get these things fulfilled, of course, subscriptions are also really helpful for these types of products. I think that this, and then once again, you know, huge segment offline, relatively small penetration online. I think it has really, really massive potential as we see this trend of people buying more and more essential everyday goods online. I think that the ceiling here is certainly really high, and it sometimes gets overshadowed by people speculating on how high penetration food and beverage can get.
Okay, so Blake, 40% personal care items. That sounds mild to medium spicy to me. What is that at right now? Do you know the penetration?
Yeah, health and personal care is at 16.5% in 2022. Wow. But we do think that it's going to reach 26% by 2026. So that's actually within itself pretty impressive growth. So for me, that gives me optimism to see that it's going to keep it can keep going up. It has that potential.
Yeah, and a nice point of comparison is pet food, which is not that dissimilar. And that's already at about, I think it was 36%. Yeah. So
I think that big growth is what kicks this up from mild to medium, though. Definitely a lot of percentage points up. Andrew, what is your spice level? What is your first prediction?
So I'll just go ahead and, say medium on this prediction. So my prediction is that the next immediate wave of e-commerce growth is going to come from returns and reverse logistics. I think it's a huge opportunity for innovation. The biggest drivers in, my research in e-commerce growth have really been about removing friction and making e-commerce easier. And we often think about what unlocks spending behavior, but we don't think about the value that people want to spend and is left on the table. There's shopping cart abandonment is a huge issue. And for me, I see it in the apparel category all the time. I wrestle, I agonize over this decision of, do I want to actually buy that, especially from a new apparel retailer I've never purchased from, because I just don't know if I'm going to like it, if it's going to fit right. So that's a massive category where I think returns can really innovate. Why is returns and reverse logistics such a headache? One, it's the arts and crafts project that you have to do just to pack it back up. And two, then getting it to a place. For me, there's a UPS near my house, and that's the last thing I want to do is stand in line, because all I ever do there is stand in line. It would be so much easier if somebody just came and picked it up from my door. So I feel like that's going to happen. And that as that happens, that's going to really encourage people to make a lot of those purchases that have been sitting in those abandoned carts.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I don't buy apparel online. That's the reason. It's because I know that I'm not going to return it. So I like that prediction. All right, Blake, coming to you for another spice level, another prediction.
All right. So this is definitely, what's the highest level of spice that we're allowed
to give here? It's extra hot.
Extra hot. All right. This is going to be extra hot because of, and I think there's a lot of, you know, less hot validity, maybe some mild validity around here, but I'm going to go with the headline, the extra hot, that I think that auto, that buying cars online will become the biggest category in e-commerce sales by the end of the decade. So this is just to give a little bit of context. So bear with me. So right now, when you look at the pie of category for all e-commerce sales, you have apparel and consumer electronics are the two biggest categories in terms of e-commerce sales. We've alluded to that earlier in the episode. This year, both of which are expected to reach $199 billion in e-commerce sales. Auto, on the other hand, which is, you know, both cars like Carvana and parts, will see just $67 billion in online sales. However, that $199 billion is 36% of total apparel sales, and it's more than half of consumer electronic sales. With auto, the $67 billion coming from online is just a very, it's a measly 4% of the massive auto category, which is the largest retail category overall in terms of sale. So we've seen over the last couple of years, companies like Vroom and Carvana make online car buying more popular, which is slowly moving that penetration number upward. I don't think that a significant portion of total car sales will ever occur online, but I do think that there's going to be a company that comes around within the next couple of years, or maybe a couple of companies, that's going to revolutionize the way that people buy cars online, and it's going to accelerate that pace forward. So it would really only take e-commerce penetration in the auto industry to rise to about 11% to reach that $199 billion in sales. And since the penetration number is so low right now with just 4%, I think there's a lot more room for growth compared to categories like apparel and consumer electronics, which are smaller in the overall picture, but see a significant portion of their sales come from online. So right now, the end of our forecast window shows auto getting nowhere near 11%. I think it caps out at around 6. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there's so much money in that space that a startup that has a really good idea to make car buying a more comfortable experience online could come around and push that up to 11%. That's all it needs. And then it could become, you know, literally the biggest sales generator in e-commerce.
Blake, you did an impressive amount of math there that I'm not going to check you on. Also, the prediction is essentially that a company will come around that doesn't exist yet. I would call that red hot for sure.
Yeah, I tried.
I'm going to give you our first red hot. All right, Andrew, take us home.
Okay, coming in hot here with an extra hot ghost pepper prediction. The next big untapped pool of e-commerce spending is going to come from drone delivery. So drones, I think, you know, feel very far off in many ways, but what we've seen start to happen really just in the last year is federal regulations seem to be easing up restrictions. Now, it's not necessarily in every geography. It's in lesser populated areas, but even in some more populated geographies like around the Dallas area. So first off, I think that could accelerate how quickly drones start to take a bite out of e-commerce. But it's where those dollars are going to come from that's really interesting. Because it's not the categories that we've already been talking about. It's bringing on new spending from things like pharmacy and medications. That's a huge area of opportunity because a lot of medications are light. They also need to reach older consumers who may be more homebound, or many of them live in rural areas. Rural, bringing more e-commerce dollars from the huge portion of this country that is rural, new dollars coming online. That's a big pool of spending. Food delivery. Not what we account for in our retail spend per se, but that's another big area of spending that I think this use case is very strong for, and including things like hot coffee and cold ice cream because it can get it to people fast. Instant needs. We've seen, you know, that market kind of materialize and then get a little bit shaky. But when people can get things instantly, there is value to the consumer. And so I think that use case is still there, but drones may be a better route to that and a more actually make the unit economics work. And the last one is, we talked about returns before. I think, and imagine, you know, I can just take that package of something that I want to return, leave it on my doorstep, call a drone, and the drone does the work and takes it back for me. That's a huge area of opportunity. So I can envision a future. It may be a little bit creepy having these drones flying around your house and bring up a lot of privacy considerations, but I can imagine a future in which it does remove a lot of friction and enable commerce that was not happening before.
Andrew, would you let a drone deliver hot coffee to you?
Absolutely not. That one seems a little bit fraught.
I think it would. Do you think a drone could deliver you a car? You could test drive it, and then the drone would come pick it up if you don't like it.
No, because they can only handle like 3 pounds. And I imagine even as they get bigger, maybe they can handle 5 pounds or 10 pounds, not a car.
Okay. That's red hot because it seems scary to me. Maybe like in reality it's not, but that's definitely red hot. I think there was an interesting thread between all of these, though, that you both seem to see a lot of e-commerce penetration coming from categories where it's not really tapped yet. Potential is untapped, rather than from a ton of growth in categories that already have a lot of e-commerce action. Thank you so much for sharing your spicy predictions with me today. And thanks for being here, Andrew.
Thanks, Sarah.
And thank you, Blake.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks to our listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and keeps it spicy. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast. And you can tune in tomorrow as Marcus brings you another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast. I'm going to go order hot coffee from a drone now. Bye.